Caustic Soda is made possible in part by the Howard P. Lovecraft Foundation, the Corporation for Morbid Podcasting, and listeners like you. Why not visit causticsodapodcast.com/support and start clicking random buttons?
If you've got Ebola, we don't recommend you hug it out. I'm Joe Foljam.
Garçon, I'll have the half-eaten fruit, please. I'm Kevin Leeson.
Look, guys, scientists have to name a lot of things. They're not all going to be gems. I'm Dr. Jenna Capick.
The jokes in this episode require humor safety level 4 containment. Enjoy your quarantine. I'm Torrin Atkinson, and this is Caustic Soda. I get it.
Ebola.
But what is Ebola?
It's a virus.
Hi, Dr. Jenna.
Hi.
Formerly known as almost Dr. Jenna.
These names are confusing, too. Yeah.
We need a new nickname for Dr. Jenna Capick.
Almost Supreme Lord of the Omniverse. Mm-hmm.
I was actually in high school voted most likely to rule the universe.
Almost Nobel laureate.
Dr. Jenna.
So yeah, Ebola is a virus.
So this is our first virus, I think, on the episode. We talked about bacteria.
Oh, it's not my first virus. Oh, wait. Oh, you mean topics. Sure.
As a topic.
Okay, so hold on a sec. What's the difference between a virus and all the other things we've talked about up till now?
Well, let's say specifically bacteria, because we've got Dr. Jenna on, and she knows about those. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what? How does all the other episodes you've ever talked about.
That's right. I'm not going to ask you how it's different from, like, tentacles or food.
Right, okay.
Or Jack the Ripper. Although, what are the similarities between Jack the Ripper and a virus?
They're both carbon-based.
I think we can keep that as a theme through this episode. We'll try and figure out the similarities between viruses and Jack the Ripper.
Contrast.
We're going to determine what Ebola is by talking mostly about what it isn't. It's not Jack the Ripper.
But it's not a bear attack. Although bear attacks did go viral on the internet.
But it is.
Oh.
Get it, guys?
I know.
I don't want it.
That was
but
a good one,
it.
Kevin. Wait a minute.
It probably is a good idea to talk about the differences between bacteria and viruses, as I understand that we have at least one person in this room, Kevin, who doesn't really understand those differences. We've talked about bacteria before and how they're basically single-celled organisms, where humans, you know, very multicellular. Mm-hmm. So viruses are on a whole different level. They don't even have a cell. So whereas bacteria, you know, have their own enzymes, do their own chemistry, replicate themselves the same way our cells replicate that, or similar to how our cells replicate themselves. Viruses, there's even an argument about whether or not they're alive, like whether you can classify viruses as belonging to life, because it's a particle that just sort of, it needs another cell, a living cell, for it to actually be able to replicate.
So viruses are zombies?
Viruses are kind of like zombies, for sure. Mm. What they do is there's different kinds, but they interact with a cell, whether it be a bacterial cell, a human cell, a monkey cell, you know, plant cell, whatever you want. And they invade that, take over the cellular machinery of that cell, and force it very zombie-like to replicate the virus instead of performing its usual function.
Okay.
And then you get millions of these viruses being produced that eventually usually kill that cell. And all of a sudden you have a whole bunch of new viruses. But sitting by itself, a virus can do nothing.
So, but we can see a virus, right? They're not like invisible, amorphous kind of, you know, we can look at it under a microscope.
A very, very powerful microscope, yes. They're very, very, very small.
How many viri can fit inside a bacterium?
It depends on the virus and on the bacteria. But so, for example, a bacteria might be ballpark around 1 micrometer in diameter, approximately.
I prefer the term micrometer.
Oh, all right.
Well, micrometer is how you right measure there. Micrometers.
Fine.
You're not allowed to change the pronunciation of the root. You can add all the prefixes and suffixes you want, but there's no changing the pronunciation of the root.
Boo.
However, so a bacteria... So, for example, when we talk about Ebola, that's closer to about 80 nanometers.
Uh-oh.
So that's about 100 times-ish smaller than the bacteria.
Isn't it 1,000?
80. 80 nanometers
so almost 100 nanometers.
No, but it's around 10.
I can't talk about pronunciation. You can't talk about math.
Bacteria vary. They can be somewhere from about 1 micrometer to 10 micrometers long.
But 1 nanometer is 1,000 of a micrometer.
This is an excellent podcast on math. Usually about 100 to 1,000 times smaller than a bacterium.
Okay. That answers my question. I'm satisfied.
Yeah. Viruses are incredibly different from bacteria, which is why you really, really, really cannot treat them at all the same. So most of the time, the antibiotics we use to treat bacteria and that kind of thing are inhibiting the cellular machinery that keeps that cell alive. A virus doesn't have any of that because by itself, it's not alive.
It's impotent.
Right. Not alive. Not dead.
Zombie.
Yeah. A zombie, yeah. Like, so there's nothing else that fits the bill here.
So what it has that separates it from something like just a toxin or a chemical that can hurt our body is it has genetic material. So a virus isn't alive necessarily. It doesn't have a metabolism. It doesn't eat and produce waste or anything like that. But it does have a genome.
It doesn't eat brains even.
It can destroy brains depending on the virus, I don't know if I'd call it eating it.
All right, okay. Yeah. Still fair. I'm trying to draw my zombie comparisons there. I'm trying to create the playground.
You keep stretching.
Yeah.
All I can think is now that shotguns are just an immune response.
Yeah, nice.
A societal immune response.
Zombie infection.
Yeah. We lost Jack the Ripper somewhere in there.
The Walking Dead is actually taking place all inside a human body.
He can cause internal damage like a virus, much like Ebola.
Why is Ebola a special virus? Why does it deserve a Caustic Soda episode? What are Ebola's bona fides?
Well, let's go into what Ebola is. We haven't really done much of a description yet. First off, it's named after the Ebola River Valley in Congo, where it was first studied in 1976. Uh-huh. Ebola virus disease, also known as EVD, also called Ebola hemorrhagic fever, is the name for the human disease, which may be caused by any of 5 known Ebola viruses. And these are, and I hope I get these right, Bundibugyo Ebola virus, Zaire Ebola virus, Sudan Ebola virus, Reston Ebola virus, Thai Forest Ebola virus.
Okay, I've got Cote d'Ivoire Ebola virus as the 5th one.
Cote d'Ivoire is Ivory Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Thai forest virus.
Gotcha.
Same thing.
Well, I'll tell you, out of all of those, I feel like I would want the Reston one the most because it feels like I can relax.
Reston is actually the one that they discovered in North America.
Oh, well, there you go.
Let me check.
Hazleton Laboratories in New Jersey.
Yeah, it's actually.
And the outbreak was in Reston, Virginia.
Reston, Virginia.
So is that like a movie where they manufactured it in a lab and it got out? Like contagion?
Discovered during an outbreak of simian hemorrhagic fever virus, SHFV, in crab-eating macaques from the Hazleton Laboratories in New Jersey in 1989.
And they just went, oops, this is a strain of Ebola.
In each case, the affected animals had been imported from a facility in the Philippines.
Well, and this is the way that a lot of the Ebola outbreaks happen. So there are animal reservoirs.
Reservoirs.
Yeah. So where
would you call them vectors?
Not necessarily. It's more a reservoir where the virus can sort of live and replicate and maintain a population.
Okay.
And I said virus live, but I'm just used to these bacteria.
Sure, that's fine.
But exist.
They can exist. The viruses get replicated, and so there's basically a pool of them that's maintained.
Right.
But a vector is more when it's part of the
transmission
life cycle.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So most of the time, what'll happen is there'll be a human index case that gets infected through contact with an animal. Mm-hmm. The sort of strongest case for the animal reservoir that most often goes to humans is probably bats. And they think that it could be transmitted through the bat saliva when they then drop sort of partially eaten fruit and pulp and that kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
And almost all the outbreaks, there have been bats around. So then you get this animal to human transmission, and then the human to human transmission starts the outbreak.
Same thing whenever they drop half-eaten fruit.
Well, actually, it's through relatively casual contact that you can...
Hugging? High-fiving?
More fluids, but it depends how intense your hug or high-five happens to be. But through fluids, through mucous membranes, through contact of sort of infected body material, and corpses remain very much contagious after death.
Toilet seats, yes or no?
I'm going to probably go with no unless you happen to have
it's a thick film.
Lots of cuts on your bottom.
So no hugging corpses is what I took away from all of that.
I think that's corpse a good hugging. Rule.
No high-fiving corpses?
Fist bumps only.
Ah, yeah. There you go. Elbow bumps.
Elbow bumps.
Yeah.
The with most the sterile of the cork. The corpse hugging.
Come on, corpsey. Don't leave me hanging. Come on, buddy. He's so rude.
He's just aloof. He's a hipster corpse.
He's a wet noodle.
The incubation period is anywhere from 2 to 25 days, but tends to be around the middle of that at just less than 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get Ebola and not show any kind of symptoms for up to almost 2 weeks.
A fortnight.
Or even an entire month. It can be that long.
So this is pretty significant as far as when we talk about outbreaks and how they happen and how far a disease spreads. For example, things like HIV, which is also a virus,
mm-hmm.
Can have quite a long incubation period that you don't have any symptoms or anything like that, but you are infected and contagious.
Mm-hmm.
This means that a single person that has been infected can then go around to a bunch of other people and infect them without ever knowing.
If they see 5 people every day for those 2 weeks.
And this is where you get these...
Are those 5 people also going to see 5 people? Because then I can't do it this morning.
No, they're not. They're just going to go home and watch
just,
TV.
Then it's just 5 times days. Like, yeah. So 2 weeks.
Lock themselves in a room.
70 people?
I'm not going to double check that, so yes.
That's what we have a doctor for.
Pretty much a doctor is a glorified calculator. Yeah. That's what we do.
Exactly. So I have my doctor's cell phone. I just ask him for simple calculations every once in a while.
The further that people can travel and the more people they can interact with, because the incubation period is longer, the wider the disease tends to spread.
The happier the virus will be.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So for Ebola, that time period is actually quite short. And the areas which it's endemic in Africa tend to – there's not a lot of travel that happens, and the villages and that kind of thing tend to be a lot more confined.
Because mm-hmm. They don't have air miles so much in the jungles of Africa. Mm-hmm.
What's in their wallets?
Ooh.
Where do they keep their wallets? Nobody knows. There doesn't tend to be really widespread pandemics and that kind of thing of Ebola because basically people catch it, they get really sick, they kind of stay home, and tends to be fairly self-limiting as it tends to kill the whole village.
Now, what's the mortality rate then, therefore, of Ebola?
It depends on as Joe was mentioning, there are 5 different species of mm-hmm. virus that can cause this. And then within there's going to be some genetic variation and strain variation, that kind of thing. So it varies between the different epidemic incidences or outbreak instances, but usually anywhere from 30 to around 90%.
90%? With
an average around 70% kill rate.
Yeah.
What?
The initial outbreak when they didn't know what it was 90% mortality rate. Yeah.
Not that knowing what it is really helps.
Or knowing how to deal with it.
Well, yeah. Well, okay. Well,
we talked about cholera, right? Like how deadly it was. But then once you find out, it's Gatorade, lots of water and restore it. And all of a sudden we're up to the 90% rather than 50%. So I'm sure that a big part of not knowing was a big part of why it was.
Well, with
so
Ebola,
deadly.
There's not a lot of awesome treatments to actually treat the Ebola itself. There's lots of experimental treatments, but people tends to move pretty fast. So there's not a lot of time to try it out.
Do you just like treat the symptoms until it passes? Does it just pass? Did your body finally fight it off?
For the 30% or so on average of people that survive, it just passes and it can be complete. You can have a complete recovery or there can be some sort of neurological or circulatory system symptoms that persist.
So it Fs your shit up for a little while.
Yeah.
And then it goes away, but maybe your shit just stayed effed up.
Right. But as for 70% of you, it doesn't go away.
Because you die.
Yeah. You go away.
You go away, Kevin.
I have
you
a list
go
of,
away.
I have a list of symptoms. Really, we could just say the symptoms are you get really sick. Because it seems like pretty much everything is in here.
Yeah.
So you get a sudden onset of influenza-like stage characterized by general malaise, fever with chills, myalgia, and chest pain. Nausea is accompanied by abdominal pain, anorexia, diarrhea, and vomiting. Respiratory tract involvement is characterized by pharyngitis with sore throat, cough,
dyspnea,
and hiccups.
So dyspnea. The pnea part is, or nia, I don't know if it's a completely silent P, but it's just basically breathing, so problems breathing, arthralgia.
Joint pain?
Yeah. The myalgia, that's nerves.
So nerve pain?
Yeah. Nerve pain, joint pain.
Just everything gets painful. Everything gets nauseous and throws up. The central nervous system is affected by headaches, agitation, confusion, fatigue, depression, seizures, and sometimes coma. Circulatory system is also frequently involved, with the most prominent signs being edema and conjunctivitis.
What's edema and conjunctivitis?
Edema is pooling fluid in the spaces between your cells and that kind of thing in your body. So let's talk a little bit about how Ebola is causing all these constellation of symptoms.
I see Taurus the bull, and I see
Orion the hunter.
Orion the vomiting, diarrhea-laden hunter. So we talked a little bit about how Ebola is transmitted. So there's a lot of fluid transmission. And although, so people are really, really worried about Ebola becoming weaponized because it has such a high kill rate, if we can call that sort of the prognosis is generally thought to be bad.
When you're above 50%, I can see that.
Ebola. However, it can actually be transmitted just the virus particle itself aerosolized. However, it can be transmitted if it's in little droplets, but it's not a really common way of transmission. It's basically through fluid contact and that kind
of thing. That's the natural.
Yeah.
Okay, transmission method.
So it manages to get inside your body, and it has some very sort of specific cell types that it goes after, one of which is they're called mononuclear phagocytes. And so what these are is there's certain kinds of blood cells that – they're white blood cells that basically take up things from their environment. And it's what a cell does when it's called phagocytosis. It sort of surrounds it and brings it into the cell body.
Is that
body.
Phagocytes with a pH?
Yeah.
I just want to point out that this is the chief reason that neither Joe, myself, nor Torn will ever become doctors, because when you said mononuclear phagocytes, we all chuckled.
I didn't. I looked at you and shook my head.
You?
At your chuckling.
Yeah.
Oh.
I raised my eyebrow in a Spock-like fashion.
He chortled. He chortled silently.
It's true. I did chortle silently to myself.
But it was all at you, because we knew that you were finding that word hilarious.
What, mononuclear or phagocyte?
Mono.
It was definitely the mononuclear. So we have the mononuclear phagocytes, yes, with a pH. Mm-hmm. We have hepatocytes, which are liver cells, and endothelial cells. And these are cells that line the insides of your blood vessels and the insides of your lymph vessels that carry your lymphatic fluid.
Okay.
And so what happens is the virus comes along, says, I was so hoping you'd make that noise. It finds the cell that is interested in, and I'm using horrible
layman's terms.
I'm being crazy anthropomorphogenic with the viruses, but you know, they're not actually looking for things, but they find the cells that are sort of their target cells.
They're hungry. Hungry.
No, they don't eat.
I'm just trying to anthropomorphize them a little more.
But the cells take them in. The cells eat up them. At which point they get inside the cell. They do what we were talking about as far as taking over all that cellular machinery and making all these hundreds and thousands of new viruses inside that cell. And then the virus itself is actually coated in the same kind of cell membrane that our cells are coated in. And there's a really good reason for that. It's because it steals ours. So it actually does what it's called budding off. The viruses, they're now complete. You have like all these thousands of little new viruses inside your human cell that has been completely taken over.
And they explode like fireworks?
They bud off. So they sort of like ooze out of the cell, taking part of the cellular membrane with it.
Okay, yeah.
And then introducing a whole bunch of new ones into that bloodstream. And so the cell that's left is just completely decimated. It's like this, you know, village that something's come in and just pillaged everything.
Okay.
And so those cells are dying, as well as
because their cell lining has been taken by the virus.
And they haven't been able to do any of their own work because they've been so busy making viruses. And unfortunately,
co-opted.
I like the voice that you chose to do your cell with. It's like, dude, I'm so busy making viruses, I can't do my regular job. Get off my back.
Give me
man.
A break.
Your cell walls are slackers, man.
That was the attitude she had, too. I mean, can you believe these guys? Can't multitask?
Pricks!
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, the cells that are having these issues and dying are the ones that are lining, like we said, the blood vessels and mm-hmm. the lymph vessels. So all of a sudden, all the fluid, you know, the integrity of that structure is breaking down.
Wait a minute. This is where the word hemorrhagic comes in, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. That's we have bleeding disorders and mostly the edema that we're talking about. That fluid is sort of leaking out of the blood vessels and the lymph vessels into the space between our cells where it's really just not supposed to be. The other problem is cells aren't – they're not just intact because they have a specific job to do. They also – everything in your body is really highly controlled. And so there's all these chemicals sure and different is. Stuff that's mm-hmm. supposed to be inside the cells. And when that's released,
makes sense. Uh-huh.
The body says, okay, now we have a big problem. There's all this stuff around that's not supposed to be around. It's not supposed to recognize it. Mm-hmm. And so then your body goes into shock.
Right.
Because – there's clearly massive damage. Yeah. Right. And so that can cause all these incredible variety of horrible, horrible, horrible symptoms that basically Fs your entire body.
So this is like when you're in high school and you threw a party and your house is trash and your parents come home after the weekend and they lose it. And everything goes to hell in a handbasket.
You're grounded
Except
for
then,
months.
Yeah. Not only your house is screwed, but then the sort of chaos from the party is spread all over the block, and then the rest of everybody else's parents thinks that they're screwing right. up and freaks out, and the whole neighborhood just turns into
Was
zombie shotgun
party.
Madness.
Yeah, that's right. There's like a used condom in somebody's front yard. Your buddy Boner's passed out in somebody else's pool.
There wouldn't be any condoms because those partiers are all making more partiers.
Oh, yeah.
To spread out to the other houses.
That's right.
They're too busy to have sex. Yeah.
Your parents show up with a flamethrower and they just start, well, this part's wrecked.
Yeah. So the neighborhood's got to go down. It's the movie Project X. Nobody else saw that movie? It's a house party that wrecks the house and then somebody shows up with a flamethrower. That actually happens in the movie.
Oh, all right.
There's a movie called Project X.
Yes.
And there's a party in it.
The whole movie is about the party. The entire movie, 5 minutes in the movie, the party starts, and that's the movie.
Why do they call their party Project? Is this a science party? They're studying people's responses to good times?
I've seen the movie, and I don't know why it's called Project X.
Okay. So maybe they made this movie, and they just said, well, we don't know what we're going to call it, so we'll just call it Project X for now.
Perhaps.
And then it was so terrible.
No, it's a good movie.
What?
Mm-hmm.
So I have an on-topic question.
Excellent.
What is the least amount of time you can get the virus and die from it?
Two days before you get your symptoms. And then if those symptoms are the bad ones, which I didn't even get to the hemorrhagic ones, which is it's often called Ebola hemorrhagic virus.
Right.
Ebola hemorrhagic fever.
Ebola hemorrhagic fever.
I got an Ebola hemorrhagic fever. And the only prescription is death.
What? Only about 10% of cases will have hemorrhagic symptoms, which means bleeding,
right.
Internal bleeding and stuff like that. But if you get it, that pretty much means you're going to die. It's a negative prognosis.
All your cell walls are breaking down and you're just leaking. Now, do you like literally leak blood? Do you start to just like hemorrhage?
Out of your nose and eyes and ears? And
so
your face starts to like run off like the German guy in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Sluicing off?
Yeah.
Sluicing off?
Yeah.
Glad we get that word in this episode.
Yeah.
It's our most caustic word we've come up with yet.
As far as the hemorrhaging and that kind of thing, so viral hemorrhagic fever can actually be caused by a whole variety of viruses. Mm-hmm. And it can have sort of different root causes within what happens with the bacteria, with the cause. It can be caused by bacteria as well. But one of the things that can happen and is thought to cause it in Ebola infections is actually a little bit counterintuitive. It's a inappropriate activation of clotting throughout your body. So
inappropriate activation of clotting.
So you think of when you're bleeding that your blood isn't clotting, but one of the problems in Ebola is that for some reason or another, while your body's in shock and all this chaos is going on in your bloodstream and your immune system is basically just freaking out, you can actually get the clotting factors to be sort of activated all over your body. You get these little microclots all throughout your blood vessels.
That doesn't sound good.
Wait.
So this can have a whole bunch of different...
So your blood is clotting inside your body.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know this. This is from the 1970s. This is these little super tiny action figures, the microclots, right?
Microclots, yeah.
Yeah.
So
I had tons of them. They're great.
The comic was really good,
yeah,
actually.
I know.
The microclots that are happening in an Ebola infection are probably less fun and have a couple of different effects that really mess you up, one of which is blocking your smaller blood vessels. So there are some blood vessels in your body, your capillaries, that basically only a single red blood cell can squeeze through at a time. Mm-hmm. A lot of these capillaries are in things like your kidneys that kind of need that blood supply and this really dense perfusion. So the little clots can block that. But the other problem is if all the clotting factors in your blood are used up, making all these little micro clots, then when you need to clot because you have a cut or there's a lot of vaginal bleeding that can happen, like through thinner membranes, any kind of injury, you can just bleed out like mad.
I hate it when I bleed.
Because you don't
vagina.
Have any clotting factors left. So it's almost as if you have a bleeding disorder because your body has already used them all up in that short period.
It's like, I'm done clotting. Forget it. I've micro
clotted. You're running
out
of clot points.
It's you know what? They're just as lazy as those endothelial cells, because they're like, you know what? I've been clotting all day. I'm done with this. Clot yourself.
And been clotting in all sorts of dangerous places throughout your body as well. So while you're bleeding out, you're forming these clots that might stop blood flow to part of your brain. Yeah.
I totally want a clot yourself t-shirt now.
Go clot yourself?
Yeah. Ebola on the back. Ebola 2012. 2012. Yeah, coming to Africa near you. Wow.
Coming to an Africa near you. Any other particularly gruesome methods of demise that Ebola can...
Extra blood leaving your body while it forms solid clumps inside your body? That's pretty gruesome.
I just want to maximize our gruesomeness.
But I remember hearing something about, like, kind of a liquefaction of your internal organs sort of thing. Is that, like, part of the process, or is that just, like, the clotting part that, like, kind of Fs up your totally... fucks up your internal processes, and that's what happens.
Internal hemorrhage is a common cause of death. So that's basically massive internal bleeding.
Yeah.
However, most of the time, the cause of death isn't actually loss of blood, aside from apparently that can happen during labor. Although if you're in labor with Ebola, that sucks. And you're
that's
probably passing it on to the baby. Like it's I don't think that there's much worse things than being in labor whilst having Ebola. But most of the time, it's more like just multiple organ failure. In certain cases, with that breaking down of the inside of the blood vessels and the inside of the lymphatic vessels, if that sort of goes far enough, then you get these massive internal hemorrhages.
That sounds pretty bad.
Well, I think what happens is, I mean, as I was saying earlier, when an Ebola outbreak happens, it tends to pretty much decimate the nearby population. The control for it is basically just strict quarantine. There's,
and
like
let,
we were
let
saying,
them
there's.
Die off? Like anybody, if you're not going to make it. You're not going to make it, buddy. Just like,
pretty
don't give
much.
It to anybody else.
There's, you know, you control for pain, you control for all the sort of neurological symptoms that kind of happen. That's sort of the treatment. There's not really.
So there's no cure, is what you're saying.
Treatment.
You can't, like, inject somebody with anti-Ebola.
There are treatments that they're developing, which are very sort of novel treatments, not really classic medicine.
Novel, you mean they hit them with books?
Well, what they actually hit them with is genetic material that sort of pairs. Oh, God. I know what could cure your Ebola.
You sure this isn't just a pickup line?
Trust
somebody
me,
used at one point?
Do you have Ebola? I have some genetic material to throw at you.
So they put in RNA, which is what the Ebola genome is made of. And so it pairs with the Ebola genome, and then it can't really be manipulated by the cell that's supposed to replicate it.
Yeah.
And so it kind of stops the virus in its tracks.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, most of the time right now it's, balancing fluid and electrolyte levels, same kind of thing as we were talking about with cholera, dealing with anticoagulants early and, you know, coagulants later and basically
keeping
coming with the symptoms as it comes up. But there's not a really good vaccine. There's not a really good treatment. So
you're
fucked.
One-stop shop.
Yeah. And so it's a really terrifying thing to think of. So when you are thinking of, you know, just picturing yourself being in a village where all of a sudden you have a couple of index cases, well, an index case that suddenly is looking like a little small endemic, you're like, oh, crap, you know, shit is about to hit the fan. And so when we're thinking of things like, you know, the newspaper reports and that kind of thing, these very sort of dramatic situations really magnify the way that the disease itself is described.
Well, if Hollywood has taught me anything, when you discover this sort of thing, the trucks roll in, the soldiers with the gas masks and the hazmat suits, like, you know, jackboot their way through everybody's homes, and they throw everybody in a pen, and everybody goes kind of crazy on each other and turns into this dystopic mini society.
Except in the little African villages, they mostly just close the roads.
So why hasn't Ebola just taken over the world and killed us all if it's so deadly?
Once an outbreak happens, you just keep everybody apart so it doesn't spread. Like,
no touching.
And it kills everyone so quickly. And like we were saying, it's a self-limiting outbreak because the incubation period isn't long enough to allow it to spread really far before people figure out what's going on.
Right. So Ebola's Ebola is like a victim of its own success.
Yeah.
It kills too efficiently.
And it's something that's definitely a major consideration for pathogens in general, things, you know, organisms that make us sick. So when we were talking about tuberculosis and leprosy and that kind of thing, where people can have these things for a really, really long time and never, ever know about it. And so that's why a third of all people are infected with tuberculosis.
Right.
And a third of all people are not infected with Ebola because it just kills you too fast.
Mm. Well, thank goodness for that.
Speaking of vaccines, there has been some work on them, especially in primates. In 2003, a vaccine using an adenoviral vector was used on crab-eating macaques. And then 28 days later, they were, curiously enough, 28 days later, they were challenged with the virus and remained resistant. In 2005, another one was tried on successfully on some non-human primates. And all the way to now, just last year, December 6, 2011, a successful vaccine against Ebola for mice was reported. And unlike the predecessors, it can be freeze-dried. So there's actually some promise for an actual Ebola vaccine.
Oh, okay.
We're getting there.
Does anybody know how many people a year Ebola actually kills?
Not that many. But a lot of the statistics we have are probably a lot lower than the actual numbers because of the way that it sort of breaks out in these little villages and that kind of thing. But
and wipes out the whole village. There's nobody left to say, hey,
well, it doesn't wipe out quite everybody. But
then
the problem
census taker shows up and goes, oh, there used to be a village here. They must have moved.
So they kind of send in people during the outbreak to try and diagnose with certain tests that can really unambiguously absolutely define that this is Ebola causing this outbreak. But after it's sort of run its course, it's really hard to definitively say if someone has actually had it and recovered. It's hard to retroactively diagnose what it was. So if they're not able to get the numbers and that kind of thing during the actual outbreak, it's hard to define it afterward.
Right. According to the CDC, since 1976, 1,230 people have died from Ebola hemorrhagic fever.
That's not very many.
However, some of the deaths actually occur in lab accidents, which as someone who's worked in a lab, I find sort of horrifying. So people just sort of prick themselves with a needle by accident or do things. And then all of a sudden, everything really converges on that one individual. And they get to try out all of the experimental treatments.
Oh, nice.
Because they don't really have this chance very – like try and imagine doing clinical trials on, you know, Ebola treatments. It's not really easy.
Are you 100% sure this isn't just some lab doctor who's really bored, who's trying to turn himself into the lizard like from the Spider-Man comics?
I can't guarantee that for you.
I suspect.
They call him the Eboloid.
Nice. What would the Eboloid's powers be?
Throwing up mostly.
Yeah. And 10% of the people, he can make them bleed internally.
No, bleeding from like all of his orifices and grossing people out terribly.
You never know how much I love you. Never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's so hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever in the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby, hear every word I say. No one can love you the way I do, 'cause they don't know how to love you my way. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever in the morning and fever all through the night. Bless my soul, I love you. Take this heart away. Take these arms I'll never use, and just believe in what my lips have to say.
you give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever.
In the news. March 2012, Washington, some cancer drugs used to treat patients with leukemia may also help to stop the Ebola virus and give the body time to control the infection before it turns deadly.
Oh, this is like a drug having like a bonus effect, just like Viagra, right? It wasn't originally supposed to be a boner pill. It was supposed to be a heart disease pill.
Yep.
And then you got boners.
And turned out it wasn't that great for heart disease, too.
Then gave people heart attacks because they were so excited about their boners.
Off-label.
The Ebola virus emerged in Africa in the 1970s and can incite a hemorrhagic fever, which causes a person to bleed to death in up to 90% of cases, as mm-hmm. discussed.
Yeah.
While rare, the virus is considered a potential weapon for bioterrorists because it is so highly contagious, lethal, and it has no standard treatment.
And we sort of touched on that a little bit earlier about this whole fear of weaponization, but that's actually been the big – it's not so much that people are looking for a vaccine for it and looking for treatment for it right. to worry about, you know, the
human
cost. Yeah, like a couple of hundred people that are dying per year or anything like that. It's definitely for fear of weaponization.
Right. Like we said, 1,230 people so far have died, which is it's all awful that many people, but compared
to... Yeah, but that's like over 30 years too, right?
That's
yeah.
probably fewer people than die in their bathtub every year in the States exactly. or something like
and
that.
And as we know, bathtubs are deadly.
Far fewer people that die than die every year from like concession machines falling on them while they're trying to get their money back.
However, nobody is worried about the weaponization of concession machines and bathtubs.
Okay. Speak for yourself, Joe Fulgham.
They're really heavy to transport. Viruses are really small.
Yeah. If you can weaponize bathtubs, we're all in big trouble.
Yeah. Screw anthrax. Here comes Ebola.
But we'll be nice and clean.
So, and our bellies will be full of Frito-Lay.
So what happened in the news, Taryn?
But right now I'm visualizing some kind of a steampunk bathtub that walks by itself like a Martian death machine.
And crushes people.
And either crushes people or just shoots highly like fire hose water. Well, it's more of a riot control device than deadly.
No. It grabs them and stuffs them in and holds them underwater.
Oh, yeah. Or just squishes them in the bathtub and shoots up blood at everyone else.
Or causes them to slip and hit their head.
Yeah, there's that too.
Or if it finds out that you have a peanut allergy, fills it full of like salted or spicy peanuts, then it submerges you.
How do we go from weaponized bathtub to peanuts?
Because it's a concession machine.
Oh, we're talking about that too.
Yeah, I assume that these machines were merged in some sort of like,
of course you did,
mad scientist kind of style.
Now you thought that
triple
none of
threat.
The rest of us did, but now I get it. That's awesome.
Snap.
But a pair of well-known drugs used to treat leukemia, known as nolitinib and imatinib.
You made those words up.
They sound like they're backwards words.
Okay, let's stop for a second, and because scientists are in charge of naming these drugs.
Yes, they are.
And not all of them are good at it, obviously.
Look, he named it after his daughter, nolitinib.
Yeah.
Would you please cut her some slack? Yeah.
These drugs appear to have had some success in stopping the virus from replicating in human cells.
Okay.
By experimenting with human embryonic kidney cells in a lab, researchers found that a certain protein was a key regulator in whether the Ebola virus could replicate or not. Ooh. The drugs work by stopping that protein's activity. In turn, a viral protein called VP40 mm-hmm. stopped the release of viral particles from the infected cells, a process known as filovirus budding.
There we go. Mm-hmm.
Drugs that target filovirus budding would be expected to reduce the spread of infection, giving the immune system time to control the infection. Our results suggest that short-term administration of nolitinib and imatinib may be useful in treating Ebola virus infections.
You know what they are? They sound like the least known Egyptian gods.
Imatinib.
Yeah, right? You know, like, it had the head of a pill, or the other one had the head of a virus, right?
Well, just to simplify things, mm-hmm. they are marketed as Gleevec and Glyvec.
Okay.
Now they sound like robots from Forbidden Planet, right?
No, they sound like twins.
They sound like members of the Herculoids is what they sound like.
Yeah. You know, they sound like Siamese twins that you travel around with Ringling Brothers.
A robot yeah. Siamese twins.
So
Gleevec likes that. Glyvec hates that.
This type of treatment sounds like it's trying to sort of contain the infection into the cells that it's already in and stopping it from spreading all those extra viruses into the rest of your body that then infect new cells. So it basically is containment.
Seems to be, yeah.
It grounds Ebola. Yeah. It like sends Ebola to its room.
It quarantines it to a single cell.
And then, and giving the body time to control the infection before it turns deadly.
It's like what we do to a village that actually gets Ebola.
Yep.
And these drugs are used to treat chronic myelogenous leukemia in humans, a disease which is caused by dysregulation of CABL enzyme, FYI.
Excellent.
A-okay.
Both imatinib and nilotinib have reasonable safety profiles, although some cardiac toxicity has been reported with long-term administration in a small number of patients.
I'll
take that chance.
Yeah, no kidding. I will roll
the
dice.
I don't even know what it means.
Yeah.
But I'll take whatever that chance. Some in a small versus Ebola. Okay. Yeah. Why'd you even tell me that?
Let's roll the Ebola bones.
It seems to me that one of the problems with any therapy that you come up with for Ebola, it really, the diagnosis is a major problem for the disease. Because as we were talking about much earlier,
it's got every symptom in the known universe.
Exactly. Like, and none of them are super specific. Like there's no real symptomatic fingerprint, which is why that the Ebola virus and other viruses were actually classified as the same thing for a while. Mm-hmm. And the diagnosis for Ebola is basically there's not something that's used very often that's like, yes, this is specifically Ebola. It's more, so where have you been and are other people sick and have you been around bats and have you been around non-human primates, i.e. monkeys?
Right.
And there are all kinds of things that can be confused.
Have you been eating half-eaten fruit
symptoms
that you found on the ground?
You know what? That's probably something you shouldn't do unless you're quite, quite hungry. If it's between eating your buddy and eating the fruit, go with the fruit. Unless you're in certain places in Africa, then maybe go with your buddy.
You heard it here first. Eat half-eaten fruit before you eat your friends and family.
Depending on where you are.
According to Dr. Jenna Capick.
I hope you didn't hear it here first.
Shall we move on to pop culture? Now, Outbreak.
Uh-huh.
In 1995, with Dustin Hoffman, Rene Russo, Morgan Freeman, Kevin Spacey, Cuba Gooding Jr., and Donald Sutherland.
Uh-huh.
I like most of those people.
A virus similar to Ebola and Lassa is discovered in Africa in 1969. 25 years later, it resurfaces.
Uh-oh.
Do you know what Lassa is?
No.
L-A-S-S-A?
It's the thing that you use to catch a cow at the rodeo.
Lassa?
Yeah. Isn't it like a milky Indian drink?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say as well.
It's also another viral hemorrhagic fever.
Oh, all right.
From Nigeria. Okay.
Yep.
Ooh, more than one.
Army Colonel Dustin Hoffman. Well, I'm just going to call every character by the actor name for simplicity's sake.
Let's just do it.
Well, what was his character name? Because you could say that and then we'd go, who?
Crossed it out and deleted it. Is sent to investigate. When he returns, he warns his boss, Brigadier General Morgan Freeman, of the lethal nature of the virus and wants to put out an alert. Morgan Freeman insists the virus is contained and unlikely to show up in the U.S. What neither man knows is that the host, a monkey, has been brought into the U.S. by freighter. Through a bribe, a young man gets the monkey out of the animal testing lab it was bound for. Soon, the man is infected. And Dustin Hoffman's ex-wife, Renee Russo, now with the CDC, is called into Boston when the young man is brought to a hospital in critical condition.
That is some serious plot manipulation.
Yeah, I know.
It's like the perfect Ebola storm.
Yeah, no, like that. I was thinking more along the lines that you have an army colonel who's like in Africa during a breakout, and then his ex-wife happens to work for the CDC and happens to be right there when the same breakout happens in the U.S.
Not only that, but the monkey didn't make it to the lab.
If Hollywood has taught me anything, there are like people breaking monkeys out of labs left, right, and center. It's happening all the time. And it's never the control monkey.
I assume so, yeah.
I want a t-shirt that says that.
Why is it never the control monkey?
TM. I TM'd it first.
Rene Russo discovers that the man has died from the virus, and at the same time, on the other side of the country, a new outbreak is starting in a California town.
There had to have been a second monkey.
A quarantine is set up to stop the virus from spreading, while the sinister Major General Donald Sutherland has his own agenda in mind to harness this lethal bug for use as a bioweapon. With the president about to order a fuel air bomb to be dropped on the little town to stop the outbreak.
What?
They must find a way to unravel the sinister plan.
This seems like a very complicated plot line.
Yeah.
We could tell everybody to stay there and not spread it, but instead let's drop a fuel air bomb on them.
I saw like the first, you know, 10, 15 minutes of this movie, and I thought to myself, I don't need to watch any more of this. And I didn't.
Oh.
He'd got his monkey fix already.
No, it smacked of terrible movie to
yeah.
me.
Yeah, I watched it all the way through, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Some trivia. In the film, it is said that Motaba, which is the name of the virus that they made up, mm-hmm. was more deadly than the Ebola virus.
Ooh, they reference Ebola and say, Ebola makes...
Peshaw.
Yeah, this makes Ebola look like, you
humbug.
Know, the common cold.
70%.
They might have actually had that line in the movie.
And when they show the picture of the Motaba virus, is it in fact a strain of Ebola that they show?
Fair enough. I can't believe they didn't invent a brand new look for a virus when they showed it to us in this movie.
Yeah, that they didn't
An
actually
artist's
create.
Artist's conception, yeah.
Yeah.
How dare they?
When investigating the village in Zaire, several of the huts are burned down. This is the traditional tribal method for controlling the spread of an infection in many parts of the world.
Well, and it turns mm-hmm. out that burning things is a pretty good way to mm-hmm. stop spread. So it's actually...
That's what my evidence has shown as well.
Well, it's it can be a fairly big problem as far as when there is an outbreak and there are traditional burial rituals and that kind of thing that do not involve burning of corpses.
Right.
And maybe this is incredibly sacrilegious in that culture. But like we were saying before,
don't
corpses
hug,
are
yep.
still really yeah. infectious.
Elbow
and so
sacrilege
you have to worry
or
about,
you all die.
Yeah.
Elbow bumps only.
So they recommend that, you know, the authorities that are coming in to help control the spread work with the local traditional medicine people to work out a solution that's acceptable to all. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Food and water are left outside the entrance to the dwelling and the occupants cannot leave. If several days, usually 3 or 4, of these supplies are not used, then the dwelling is burned down to stop the infection from spreading.
With the people in it?
Seems like a good system.
With the people in it?
No, but if the supplies haven't gone away, it means they're dead.
Yeah.
Oh, so they don't go in to check.
Yeah. They just leave the
Would
stuff
you?
Outside.
That actually is
It's brilliant.
Brilliant. What if, but
yeah,
what
I
if
just didn't just, like them.
What if you're
I'm
just,
fussy.
What if you're just so too sick to actually go to the front door and get the food?
I'm feeling better. I'm not dead yet.
I'm burnt quite badly now, but...
The bomb that explodes in the ocean, spoiler alert, was scripted to explode over the town, vaporizing it. Boss Film, I guess is the company, actually mm-hmm. did the effects sequence showing the destruction, but test screenings forced the filmmakers to reshoot the end with the town being saved. Would have been a better movie, I bet you, if they hadn't done that.
Probably. Well, I mean, there were so many formulaic, awful formulaic things happening. I'm not 100% sure that other alternate ending could have saved it.
And the footage of a cartoon seen in the movie theater scene is from the Tom and Jerry episode Polka Dot Puss. Its appearance in Outbreak is apt, as in the cartoon, Jerry tricks Tom into believing he has caught measles and then proceeds to cure him.
Ah, nice.
The episode ends with both Tom and Jerry actually contracting measles and being quarantined.
Aww. Together?
Did you ever notice how when you were a kid, you were like, that darn cat, why is it chasing that poor mouse? Why can't they get along? And then later on you grow up and you go, that mouse is a fucking asshole.
Then there's another film called Ebola Syndrome. From okay. 1996.
Oh, that sounds a little on the nose.
This is, well, the actual name I can't pronounce.
Hold on, you have to say it. You have to say it like this, Torn. This movie, coming to a theater near you, Ebola Syndrome.
Ebola Syndrome.
Is it really a syndrome?
No, but the movie is. This
yeah.
is...
I didn't watch this. This is a Hong Kong film from 1996, but I asked Richard Doyle to give me his... 4 sentence or less review.
Mm-hmm. And it came out as?
Not for the faint of heart, a Hong Kong Category 3 film. Who knows what that means?
I do not.
I got nothing.
Do they rate them like typhoons?
Or...
yes. Maybe it destroys this
the
many children.
That's right.
Children's minds.
This many people's innocence will be destroyed.
It's the Hong Kong equivalent of an NC-17.
Ah.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I was about right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From the director of The Untold Story that pushes the boundaries of even that genre, a murderer flees from Hong Kong to South Africa, where he contracts Ebola by raping a woman with the disease and spreads the epidemic back to Hong Kong, again with more raping, chock-a-block full of violence, gore, nudity, and bodily fluids.
So, to the best of my knowledge, there hasn't been any really
sexually
significant...
transmitted Ebola?
Oh, no, that can happen to all fluids, yep. No, okay. For sure, sexually transmitted Ebola. But
you sound awfully sure of that, Jenna.
That's usually Kevin's territory.
Oh, you are a doctor, I guess.
But as far as I know, there haven't been any big outbreaks in sort of more densely populated cities. But I can imagine that that would be pretty darn terrifying.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, especially considering the number of people that you come into contact with in a day.
Yeah, I wonder why it hasn't broken out in a more
coming
density.
Soon to a highly concentrated town near you.
Well,
Ebola syndrome.
There aren't that many bats. Usually,
oh,
and that kind
bats.
Of thing, like the
but monkeys. There's monkeys.
In
there's
cities?
Escaped
really?
Monkeys
yeah,
in
absolutely.
The labs
running wild.
There aren't a lot of rural monkey labs,
right?
So there are more urban monkey labs. But as far as the possibility of weaponization and that kind of thing, densely populated areas could definitely wreak a heck of a lot of havoc. Although a lot of the outbreaks, as well, that have killed a lot of people in Africa and other places was mostly Africa actually, has to do with underprepared and understocked hospitals. So the transmission is through fluids, through that kind of thing. And while in North American hospitals, we think of things like, you know, there's no such thing as needles you use more than once, especially with more than
right.
one patient.
Right.
But when you have super limited supplies and someone needs an IV or they're going to die, then you might use that needle again.
Mm-hmm.
There's been really explosive outbreaks that have happened around hospitals and that kind of thing, where the sanitation and the sterilization of things just is not up to the level that we have in North America.
Well, that goes a long way towards my hospital phobia.
Now you should be like hugging North American hospitals for
yeah,
never using their needles more than once.
Well, now we know what to do after the episode ends.
It's like,
hug a hospital.
It's like the African Tourism Commission. They should just they should come up with this information. Ebola doesn't really happen in populated areas and don't use our hospitals.
I have a public service announcement.
All right. Lay it on us.
How to avoid Ebola. This is from ehow.com. Number one, avoid direct contact with someone suffering from Ebola. A little
done.
Obvious.
All right, okay.
The disease is not airborne. However, it is highly contagious through bodily fluids, as mentioned. Those
mm-hmm.
suffering from Ebola will bleed severely from orifices and skin can rupture with touch. Now, of course, that's 10% of cases.
Yeah.
But,
right.
But if they do, that's really, really bad.
Yeah.
Well, and just to give you a little bit of an idea of how contagious it is, it's actually to work with Ebola, you need a biocontainment 4 facility.
Biocontainment 4?
Yes.
Is that like DEFCON?
Well, so for example, working with a non-pathogenic E. coli and that kind of thing is biocontainment 1. Just means that you dispose of the waste fairly rigorously.
Oh, I was hoping it was going to be like number of items that you put on your body.
No.
I got
although
one glove,
gloves.
I've got a jock strap, I've got a bucket on my head, and I've got a ring.
So working with some other things that are usually not infectious to humans, especially if they have a normal immune system, is biocontainment 2. If they have the possibility to infect people with compromised immune systems or in a small number of cases, something like tuberculosis, which does kill people, is biocontainment 3.
Okay.
And so Ebola is above that in biocontainment 4.
Is that the maximum? Biocontainment level 1016?
So biocontainment level 3, you're already completely suited up.
Right.
Totally in your own sort of self-contained thing. I don't think you have a breathing apparatus.
You just have to breathe your own stale farts?
For biocontainment, and you have to like take everything off and re-clean when you have to go pee. But for biocontainment 4, you do have a self-contained breathing apparatus, I believe.
Have you ever been in one of these biocontainment 3 or 4 suits?
I have not. My Ooh, colleagues have.
Got something to look forward to.
As a matter of fact, there are so few BSL 3 and BSL 4 facilities that Wikipedia has a list of all of them. Four biosafety level 4 is definitely the highest.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And there's, I'm going to say 50 threes and fours.
It's kind of hard to get more contained than in a suit. With
could be in
it's
a
basically
suit,
in
a bubble.
Space suit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how much more contained you could possibly get.
Underneath the ocean.
Separated from what you're studying.
Yep. Yeah, nice. Yep. Just look at it through a window.
Right. Well, you send a submersible out.
Which makes me wonder how these lab accidents happen. Like you're in this giant suit with these massive thick gloves and all of a sudden you're like, you know, to prick yourself, I feel like you'd need to put some force behind that.
Well, it's always like the person goes too far from their air source and the hose gets pulled out of the back of them or
yeah.
something like that.
Yeah.
You would think that the engineers would somehow create
or the hoses. Patient goes crazy and grabs a scalpel and
oh,
cuts
that's
them.
Totally true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think every single time would 100% be human error. It's this jackass kind of did it to themselves, right? Because they're like, I'm totally not wearing the respirator mask today. I've been breathing my own stale farts for far too long to stand this 1 minute longer. And when was the last time anybody pricked themselves? When was the last time anybody exposed themselves to one of these things? Forget about it. It's not going to happen.
I have a question. Is breathing stale farts less pleasant than breathing fresh farts?
Yeah.
That is a good question, actually.
Yes, the answer is yes.
That is the kind of question that we need to ponder at great length here on Caustic Soda.
Look, I'm not going to deny it. The fresh fart, while bad, at least you can go, oh, yeah, wow, that was pretty fresh. You know, good one.
You feel like a little best like, before that was,
oh, like, you get the fresh fart and you go, oh, but that was a good one. But, oh.
My fresh ones smell like roses.
But the stale ones, you walk into a room with a stale fart and you just, what the?
Takes longer to acclimatize.
And it's not as concentrated, so you're not sure it's there, and then you're disgusted, and then you get more of it. Yeah, no, stale, worse. Number two in our public service announcement on how to avoid Ebola. Finally back on that. Avoid eating infected animals, especially monkeys. Apes and monkeys are known carriers of the Ebola virus, and it can be caught by eating infected animals. Done.
For the record, we are also primates, so that your buddy falls under that.
Okay. So don't eat people.
Don't eat infected Ebola individuals. People.
Right.
Right.
Number three, wash your hands with soap after shaking someone's hand.
Elbow bumps. Right. Just stick to elbow bumps.
Yeah. Yeah, or
especially with corpses.
Just have a Costco-sized tub of it in your back pocket.
Yeah, carry
the like antibacterial.
I was going to say carry it around like
Purell.
A Ghostbusters backpack.
Not a bacteria.
You just want regular soap.
I
want
to make like a wetsuit where the inside of the wetsuit is just soap and water. So as I walk around, I'm constantly washing myself.
It's a soap suit.
A soap suit. Yeah, that's exactly what I want. Number
and
four.
And the 50-pound diving head made of copper.
And then some kind of thing on the back so it can circulate all this and clean out the...
Torn can attest to how comfortable those things are,
why
right?
Why are my eyes constantly irritated? I don't understand.
That's phase one. Phase two, I'm going to switch to no more tears.
Okay. Right, yeah, okay.
And then it'll be fine. And then I'll be, well, it's a little annoying, but at least I don't have Ebola.
I'll tell you what, I will buy you a biocontainment 4 suit for Christmas.
Okay. Nice. I'll totally wear it. I will go to the mall in that.
I think your social life might take a nosedive.
Or I might seem to be the world's most interesting man. Why is that guy wearing a containment suit at Metrotown Mall?
Ebola?
I need to talk to this man.
I need to get close to the guy in the hazmat suit.
He obviously knows something interesting.
No, everybody's going to think you know something they don't know and will avoid you like the plague. Like wherever you walk, they'd be like, It's in Toys R Us. Again, flee, everyone, flee.
I think that should actually be number three on the public service announcement is avoid people in biohazard suits.
Number four, avoid sharing clothes mainly with the strangers or someone suffering from Ebola. So, again, don't be dumb. Don't share your clothes.
Hold on a second. Don't exchange clothes with strangers. Yeah. Like, when are you compelled to do that? Like, when does that occur to you? It's like, hey, stranger, you want to swap underwear?
I like your shirt.
No. You don't go to shirt swapping parties? Yeah. They set them up on the internet. Everybody just shows up, takes their shirt off, and no.
The problem is this clearly is not an Ebola-specific public service announcement. This is a general public service announcement.
Yeah, it's for as dumb as you can be. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, you mean I shouldn't be changing clothes with a guy who's got Ebola?
But we have a lot of clothes, right? We each have a lot of clothes. But in some places, you know, you might do a little more sharing.
Fair enough. There's a good question from Mike. Would washing the clothes get rid of, like washing them in just a regular washing machine, get rid of the Ebola?
Wait a sec, Joe. Is this just a plot for you to get free clothes?
There's only one way to find out.
It would absolutely, absolutely, absolutely reduce the number of virus particles that might be on those clothes. Right. I don't know if there's any detergent out there that's like guaranteed to 100% get rid of Ebola.
Should I wash in cold or hot water?
Well, the thing is with a virus, so Ebola is a little more... delicate than some viruses because it does have this outer lipid bilayer that it gets from our cells.
Okay.
So it's got sort of this more biological component that makes it a little more delicate. Some viruses are actually like they're like little rocks almost as far as what they can stand up to. So they can
like little seed pods that like ride on
your
clothes, right?
Yeah. So doing something that is going to kill a bacteria, like putting it in detergent or different kinds of things, might not actually hurt the virus very much. However, for Ebola, because it needs that outer covering to be able to join up with the cell, then a detergent like a soap would probably destroy that.
Right. Because a lipid is fat and detergent will break up the fat and oils.
All right. Okay.
Number five, cover your hands with gloves and make sure that your nose and mouth are properly protected before you touch on someone suffering from Ebola. In the later stages of the disease, Ebola will cause a host to convulse in an effort to spread blood to other hosts.
Nice.
So they might cough up infected blood on
so
you.
So is that trying to insinuate that these people are zombies?
Yeah.
I think I don't know how much I trust this public service announcement.
Well, it is from ehow.com.
Yeah.
In 28 days later, if you remember, the crow plucked some material from a dead zombie infected person and then dripped that droplet of blood into that guy's eye and then he instantly became an infected person.
So that could totally happen with Ebola.
Yeah.
And then you'll turn into a zombie and kill everybody.
That's right.
Number six, Ebola patients should be reported quickly and given treatment as soon as possible, of course. You know, I was going to go to the doctor about this Ebola that my roommate's got, but I'm just going to wait for a while.
We'll wait it out.
And while we're at it, we're going to, you know, hug and
he's cool.
Exchange clothes.
I got to take him to the hospital. I'm going to borrow one of his shirts.
That's right.
For the drive. And number seven, someone killed by Ebola should be buried quickly, or as we learned, burned.
Yeah, just get rid of it, get rid of the fluids, get rid of everything as fast as you can.
You can burn me when I'm dead. Not when I'm not dead.
Right, right now.
Oh,
like,
all right.
Well, I had to add that.
I don't have my lighter.
And there was an evil glint in Torin's
eye?
Yeah,
I said it and looked over at Torin, and he just kind of almost smiled. And I was like, no, wait.
Next segment,
Lesser of Two Evils.
So you're infected with Ebola.
Or
now you are too.
Or in a suit with stale farts. No.
I will take Ebola every time over a suit.
Or call back to our slavery episode. You are enslaved on a slave ship, rowing for the rest of your natural life.
How long is the rest of the natural life?
Well, you know, I mean, it probably
depends on how fit you are. And
What's the mean survival time for rowing slaves?
Let's say 20, 30 years.
Wow, that's significant.
I'll go with you. Oh, let's say 20.
Okay, 20.
30 years.
Probably unlikely.
Yeah. Probably less for me. Older, more for Jenna, younger.
You endothelial cells.
So the question is, with Ebola, are we going to say that you're in a lab and you know you have Ebola people around and then you get cut or something like that? Or are we going to say an Ebola bomb goes off?
Yeah, let's say weaponized.
Weaponized Ebola.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, but the point is, you know you have Ebola.
Right.
The only question is whether or not you're going to be in the 90%.
Say 70.
Let's say 70% of people that die.
Let's say 80 and split the difference.
80, or okay, 80%.
70 to 90% of people who perish.
You got one in five chance of living.
Yeah, you got a 1 in 5 chance of living. But once you live, I mean, maybe it'll kind of fuck up some of your organs or whatever, but you'll go on with the rest of your life.
And the death really isn't very pleasant either. It's not like an easy slipping into sleep. You know, when all of your organ systems are failing, right. Like this sucks. Like it just sucks.
How about when your skin ruptures and you bleed out and you thrash and convulse and try and infect other people around you? How about that part? That sounds pretty uncool.
When you've got clot loss.
And then you have fewer friends.
Yeah.
So at that point, you're just a jerk.
The worst part is the loss of my friends.
So this is the classic short-term pain, long-term gain. So you can row in a slave ship. Your lifestyle, not good. You're not going to be happy. This is not a pleasant way to go about your business.
No.
You got splinters in your hands from the oar and
splinters. That's the worst part. Splinters.
Sore muscles, I guess. and sitting in your own crap.
How about the whippings?
There's
and the
whippings. The whippings. And the fact that you know that you're part of this slave trade.
Now, here's the thing, though.
So you're part of a team. You have some some camaraderie. You're saying that's a plus?
No, I'm saying you're working for the people who enslaved you.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So to get more
so
slaves.
Then it's like a double
possibly
burn.
To replace you when you die.
Yeah. But there are people who have escaped from enslavement. Like there's a chance you could at some point in time.
Sure. You got the moxie.
In that 20
and
years.
And the good luck.
And the good luck and the moxie, you could get away, right? I think I'm going to go with slave ship because I think I'm a good rower.
Right.
I'm a good rower. I think I could.
You're going to be nice and lean.
Yeah.
And
I could Ben Hur
good
style
definition.
It. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and stay on just long enough to get in great shape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to be
Conan.
Like ripped.
Yeah.
But you have to switch back and forth to the different sides of the boat so that you don't get like really lopsidedly ripped.
Oh, yeah.
I would change my name to Kevnan.
Kevnan?
Instead of Conan.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Kevnan.
Uh-huh.
Good news. You made fun.
You'd still be Hugosaurus.
Uh-huh.
You'd just be much better at it because you have these big, muscly, hugging arms.
So I'm going to go with slave ship. I'm going to go with slave ship because I got the outside chance.
But I'm leaning towards Ebola because of the recent news that there's a good chance, you know, assuming we're in a modern city, like let's say we're in Vancouver, that we could get treatment.
Here's hoping. Of course, you and everybody else who's been hit by the Ebola bomb.
There's so many of them.
Yeah.
The entire city.
How's the supply chain on that shit?
Oh, yeah.
Do we know? Do we know how many people have that kind of cancer? I don't know.
Yeah, and you only got 2 weeks to, like, you know, 2 days to, you know, 15 days for that before that thing runs its
course.
That's
true, and we're not ready if it happens today.
No.
We are not ready.
And it pretty much have to happen. You have to get the drugs, like, pretty darn soon before ASAFP. It overwhelms your
So, not a good chance that that's actually going
to
happen.
Joe, you have to make your decision, then I'll make my decision.
Well, we know how much I hate work.
Yeah, that we do.
Yeah.
And on the plus side...
You'd rather die bleeding out of Uranus than row.
Yeah, but... But on the plus side, if I know I'm going to die bleeding out my anus, that's the time to take all those drugs that I never wanted to do because they would ruin the rest of my life.
Oh, so you're
just
you're
line up the heroin, baby.
So you're
you're hoping to do
anyway.
An OOD before
recreational
you die.
Recreational Ebola.
Well, using it as an excuse to try some recreational drugs that...
So basically you're copping out by suiciding.
Pretty
well,
much.
No, that's not necessarily true.
I'm not making my decision. I'm just comparing
apples
how things
and oranges
would play
here.
So we've got.
Because I can kill myself on the boat.
Not with heroin, though. They're not going to give you heroin. It's true. You'd have to like hit yourself with the big rope.
Yeah,
I might get a high from starving myself.
Yeah.
They'd IV you. And
would they?
They'd whip you if you didn't eat.
They would whip.
Terrible.
They would whip you if you didn't eat.
I'm not going to eat. I'm going to starve myself.
Maybe well,
Joe makes a salient point.
Then
that,
I'm going. Then I'm going to whip you. I mean.
No, he's not saying that that's his conclusion. You haven't concluded yet, have you?
No, but see,
there's a plus.
The chance of escaping is a big plus for that. But I don't know how good I'd be at that.
The whippings and the rowings.
I know if it was me making decisions for a Dungeons & Dragons character, I could do it.
So for your escape on the boat, how do you see this going down? Are you just going to break your bonds Thundar style? Demon dogs! And then just jump off the ship and swim to the next continent? Or is there going to be like a slave transfer and you're going to put on a mustache and just kind of slip out?
Mine would probably be some kind of social engineering because that probably tends to be my strength. There would be some kind of fooling or getting in good with one of the slavers.
You just get used to their routine and like try and exploit it in some way, shape, or form. You wouldn't know
the changing of the guards.
Until you got to know your slavers... You can't possibly formulate a plan.
All right. Try and keep telling them my name so that they treat me like a human being, and maybe eventually they'll let me become a slaver rather than a slave. I don't know. I don't know if that's worth it, though. There's all that work involved.
Yeah, see, I guess Ebola, the one really good thing about it is, either way, it's over in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're not expected to do anything.
Yeah.
Positive
or negative. They, like, lock you in a room and try and make you comfortable and just wait it out.
This is a really, really difficult one.
People would probably be nice to
you. I think I'm going to go to the Ebola.
Yeah.
As much as it's horrible and it's only a 30%, 20% chance of survival, then it's done and
yeah.
You should consider that
it's over and done with relatively quickly.
If you do take a bunch of drugs that you think are going to ruin the rest of your life, then you're kind of hoping for that 80% versus the 20%.
Well, I would kind of wait. I would wait until it's sure before,
Until you started to
if I start bleeding out, which they say that means negative prognosis, you're probably going to die. Then it's like, all right, my insides are bleeding.
Fill me up.
Bring on the heroin.
Right.
Let's do some other horrible things that I have never done.
Yeah.
Because why not enjoy
this? Go existentialist style.
Yeah, man.
Call all the people you always wanted to be mean to but thought it'd be bad for your career.
Totally. Prank phone calls. You could, caller ID this. I don't care. I'm going to be done in like 2 weeks.
Come and get me, sucker.
Yeah, that's
I'm
right.
I'm free to do what I want.
You're falling on Ebola.
I'm going to say Ebola, but I could probably very easily flip to slavery. It's a pretty good question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm leaning towards slavery. Because because...
She knows too much. That's her problem. She's like been inside of like clinical situations.
I'm wondering if she's ever
been
in a
slave situation.
I'm not
that kind of doctor, dude. Well, the thing is, I believe in, humans' ability to really adjust to their surroundings. And everything becomes relative after a while. So I feel even if you're, like, there's probably, even though every day is a bad day, There's like good days and bad days on the boat, you know? Like
you can sing rowing songs, jaunty sea shanties.
Yeah. No, but like every once in a while, you know, when the clouds cleared and the sun came down, it hits your face even though you're rowing away. I feel like you could have moments of joy. There would be things to live for. There's those days where maybe, you know, you get an extra noodle or something.
Right.
And that becomes super important.
Yeah,
you're right.
An extra weevil, I think, is what you're thinking of.
However, I would have a 20% chance of having years of good days, of actual real good days.
Yeah, and an 80% chance of having like two more days.
Yeah, and most of those
are really crappy
anyway.
But
you know that you're going to be seated. It's going to be like an airplane. You're going to get seated in the slave.
Wait, next to a crying baby?
Next to a crying baby. Or just some smelly asshole.
Yay! This boat.
Apparently, I'm getting stuck beside Joe, who hates rowing the boat.
You know, you're on one of those slave boats that doesn't have Wi-Fi.
So I'm going to take the slave boat, but only if it gets to sit next to Kevin.
What, so I can do the rowing for you?
So that I can annoy you for 20 years.
See, that's where you get
over,
your joy.
Stand your side
that's
of the bench.
Of joy.
That's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yes.
It's such a weird feeling to know you're alive. It's such an awful feeling. You're dying inside. And when you wake up, startled to say, I hope I don't go crazy today. It's such a bad feeling. An ominous feeling you know that we'll be back when the week is new, and we'll have more gross facts for you, and you'll have things you want to hear about. We will too.
Caustic Soda was recorded by Mike Leeson while he was receiving maggot therapy. To comment on episodes, make a donation, see show notes, links, and videos, visit causticsodapodcast.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook. Email us at info@causticsodapodcast.com.
Bye bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!